15th to November 5th at the historic Bangor Opera House. For tickets, call 207-942-3333 or visit PenobscotTheatre.org. Nothing goes with a lobster roll like a side of murder. Dirty Deeds Down East, a world premiere by Maine playwright Brent Ascari in their 50th season. We'll see you at the theater.
We're back here on Downtown. It's 4:32 on a Thursday afternoon. Rich Kimble here. Michael Sokolow from the University of Maine joining us in studio. And on the telephone line with us, a gentleman who has been very busy over these last nearly 24 hours. He's the Maine Press Association Journalist of the Year from the Bangor Daily News, Michael Shepherd. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Rich, and hi, Dr. Sokolow, my old professor.
Hey there, Mike.
It has been a whirlwind here since the news first hit last night. What's the latest? What's the most current information we know, first of all, on the ongoing search for this suspect, Robert Card?
Yeah, right now there's a lot of action over in the Lisbon and Bowdoin areas. We've been watching helicopters kind of buzz from the Androscoggin River, starting in Lisbon and even up north into the Monmouth area and some other places. So there's just been a lot of action, and hydroplanes have been buzzing the river. There looks to be a search warrant being served on Robert Card's home back over in Bowdoin. So really we're, our focus is on the human stories out of Lewiston, but the action in terms of the manhunt is a little bit east of here.
Well, and I feel like the thing that made us feel safe is also making it tougher to find this guy, because there is so much open space out there. There are a whole lot of places to hide if you're on the run.
Yeah, I mean, and let's face it, right? They found his car late last night. I think it was 9 or 10 p.m. So it was secured pretty quickly. He just wasn't there. So by the time, everyone was kind of out and the police presence was peaking and the media was back in Lewiston. I mean, he had been, if he is alive and walking around, right, he had a lot of time out there, and he certainly has had a lot of time now. And it's sort of reminiscent of, you guys will remember the John Williams case up in Somerset County. Mm. Of course, killed the sheriff's deputy Eugene Cole and was out there for 4 days. It's rare though to see this after a mass shooting in two public places. Mass shootings in two public places. So obviously big concerns throughout the area, and a lot of the state is just closed. I mean, all the way up to the University of Maine, right? It's unlike anything we've ever seen up here.
Well, let's talk about that human toll that you mentioned. We did get some numbers from the police earlier this afternoon, and I believe the total is believed to be 18 people killed and 13 wounded.
Yeah, and that differs from a lot of the numbers, and I mean, Dr. Sokolow will have been closely observing this. That differs a lot from some of the numbers we saw earlier. I mean, some outlets were quoted a city councilor saying 22 dead last night. We went with a police source who said as many as 20. There were reports of up to 60 injured and ended up being 13. So I think this is a big reminder of how these events unfold and how early reports are often wrong, and sometimes the more specific they are, the earlier on, the more off they are.
Right, but let's give credit at least, because the Sun Journal did source that to a city councilor, and you're, yep, above 20 did source it to the police, so it's not like I necessarily blame the journalist if the attribution's there, right?
No. I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just saying that the reports here were volatile early on, right? And the ranges were, the ranges were awfully high.
Right. I did have a question. So about 40 minutes ago or a half hour ago, the public information officer for the state police, Shannon Moss, announced that there won't be any more. There won't be another press conference, sure, barring any change today. What should we in the audience make of that? What does that mean?
Well, that means they don't have much more to tell us, I think, past what we, I think they wanted to always come out and talk to us. And that was certainly true last night when they had a suspect apprehended. They came out today to obviously give the toll and to announce that this suspect, Robert Carr, was no longer just a person of interest, but a suspect as well, facing eight murder charges to start. So they've been, you know, in terms of the formal criminal proceeding, right? They've been dotting their I's on that end, while obviously trying to track him down with more than 350 police fanned out across the area.
We're talking with Michael Shepherd of the Bangor Daily News. I want to try and get the sequence of events correct here. I believe the first 911 call came in from the bowling alley at about 6:56 last night.
That's right.
And eight people ended up being killed at that first location.
I believe it was seven at the first location.
And then, am I right that it was only about 12 minutes later that mm-hmm. the other location, Schmeggy's Bar and Grill, that the next 911 call came in? That's about, what, a 3 or 4 mile trip?
Yeah, it's across town. It's over there, kind of close to the green line where the bowling alley is, and of course Schmeggy's, the bar, is kind of in the core part of the city downtown along the river. So if you Google map that, right, it's a 9 minute drive, which means he was only in the bowling alley for obviously he could have been driving fast, but he was probably only in the bowling alley for 1, 2, 3 minutes, and then and probably got across town.
Do we know any more information, Michael, about the victims themselves?
Yeah, we're starting to. They have not been officially identified, but we're starting to. We should be publishing a story that identifies some of them. Through family, friends. We have quite a few names to start with. I think you can bet on most of the victims being identified within the next, 12 hours, at least unofficially, meaning the police may not be the ones who say it, but it may be compiled through reports from family and friends.
Do we have any idea yet why these two businesses were targeted, if he knew any of the people there, if he was someone who might have been a regular at either of those spots?
We don't know exactly. There have been some there's social media traffic that he may have played cornhole at the bar, but it's hard to say. The police have not discussed anything pertaining to motive, and him playing cornhole at a bar wouldn't necessarily establish a motive anyway, right? So it's I think it's a little too early to tell.
Although, just to follow up on that question, I did see that your newspaper, Sawyer Loftus, and the Sun Journal as well had this, and even the Daily Beast has this, speaking to his relatives, that apparently part of his psychiatric illness, he did in fact have, these were targeted, these two places, he did have hallucinations, persecution complexes about these two specific places, which sounds incredibly horrible. But I did see that at your BDN website, at the main focus, Sawyer Loftus was reporting that.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, and then that comes from his family, and I don't know, you don't know exactly what form that takes, but there could be something that gets to motive right there.
Have you heard anything from law enforcement about how long we'll be in this state? Obviously, this is the second largest city in Maine. You can't keep it locked down forever.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty amazing, right? It's businesses are essentially closed. You can't get anything in Lewiston right now, or in Auburn and in some of the surrounding towns as well. So while the state police are not holding a news conference tonight, we will hear from the Lewiston Police Chief, Senator Susan Collins, and Representative Jared Golden here at around, I think it's 6 o'clock. So there will be an opportunity for us to ask all sorts of questions of those three disparate people. But I think there are some questions for the local police in that as well.
Now, I know from my experiences in education and what the protocols are when we plan for active shooters in a school campus, and it's always important to have that point person who is the conduit for information to the media. Is there one person that you can all rely on to try and get that accurate information?
Yeah, I mean, overnight, I think people were relying on different information. As I talked about the differing casualty counts, and one person was one outlet was citing a city councilor, another outlet was citing the sheriff. Other outlets were citing, federal law enforcement sources, and the state police were declining through last night to give, casualty estimates, minimums, maximums, whatever have you. So you know, the state police, they're in charge of this investigation, this scene, but there are, you know, we've seen cruisers from Melrose, Massachusetts blocking roads. I mean, this is really a on all hands on deck situation. The state police are in charge, but you know, you still have to rely on all sorts of sources of information in these situations.
Now, is that shelter in place order still extended into parts of Sagadahoc County?
It is northern Sagadahoc, so yeah, right around the Bodenham Richmond areas.
All right, just a journalistic question for you, Michael, and with Professor Sokolow here, because the world of media has changed so much in the last couple of decades, and I'm not sure everybody understands how this works with real journalism. When you get some information, what is the process before you go with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a good example is just how we started mobilizing people, right? I mean, you hear crazy things on scanners, right, all the time. And if you wrote every story that came across your scanner, your police scanner, you would say a lot of people were in dire situations when they may not have been. So I think what you have to, from the jump, you have to look at all the reports that are coming out in front of you, you know, whether it's pictures, video, how many of them there are, and you kind of have to make a call. Is this a major event? And, you know, we made the call obviously rather early that whatever this was, right, in the moment, it looked like a major event. And thankfully, it was a horrible, horrible incident, but it didn't live up to some of the early reports we saw. And, you know, there were reports of 5 shooters or 6 shooters. And if you read the handbook that we follow to cover these situations, you'll learn that very infrequently are there more than one shooter in this kind of situation. So, you know, we kind of know what to look for. You suss it out, you start making calls, and you figure it out and allocate resources accordingly. So it's, and all the way down, I mean, we're sticklers for getting people on the record, using names, not anonymous sources in these high-stakes situations, and mostly paid off last night.
Mike, a quick question. You and Rich just talked about Congressman Golden and Senator Collins, and I'm wondering, you're so plugged in Augusta. You're really one of the most widely known political reporters in the state. What's your sense of the local state reps and state senators? What's your sense of what's actually happening in Augusta right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about this after the shootings in Bowdoin that spilled onto Interstate 295 earlier this year. There were pushes for gun control, but there were also pushes for a more targeted approach by even an influential gun rights group, the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, to address gun transfers or transactions to people who have mental illness. And that group has been really tight with Governor Janet Mills, who is sort of used to support gun control measures. Has not, right, while she was actually in office as governor. So I think there's going to be a lot of push and pull. I think everyone's going to try to put their ideas in the hopper. And these are the unfortunate situations that supercharge these debates across the country. And I think that's going to happen here.
I would add that we had scheduled State Senator Joe Baldacci to be on with us this afternoon. And right before airtime, Joe got back to me and said that legislative leadership had asked people to not make any public comment. I assume everybody wants to be on the same page.
Well, there's a lot of dynamics there, right? The governor is not a proponent of gun control. Senate President Troy Jackson is from Allegash, has won NRA endorsements in the past. He helped defeat some gun control measures just this year. But House Speaker Rachel Talbot Ross is a very progressive Democrat from Portland who supports gun control measures. And I think it's still a really difficult issue for rural Democrats. Jared Golden, we talked about him. He's another one who is against gun control measures generally. So Maine is different, right? It's a Democratic state. It's a safe state that has very lax gun control laws, and there are really only a handful of states like that. We're different, and that issue always hits differently here.
Michael Shepherd of the Bangor Daily News. Michael, thank you so much, first of all, to you and everybody at the BDN for the great work you've been doing and continue to do covering this story, and thanks so much for making some time for us this afternoon.
Thank you both. Good to talk to you.